My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie.
Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Will Lucas, and this is Black Tech Green Money. Morgan DeBon is a serial entrepreneur, executive, and corporate advisor. She's founder and CEO at Blavity, Inc., the leading digital media company for black culture and millennials. It's home to Afrotech, Blavity News, 2190, Travel Noir, Shadow and Act, and Blavity TV. She's an advisor to influential global brands and companies, including PepsiCo, American Airlines, CES, and other businesses. She's also an angel investor. A lot of people, including myself, have been advocating in recent years that things like coding and engineering should be required for students in the elementary and high school level, right alongside foreign languages, as they might provide for long-term stability and employment. But shocking to many, major tech companies are laying people off, even their engineering departments. How should we be looking at this?
We're certainly going through a shift in how companies were built in the last 10 years would be very different than how the next 10 years of companies will be built. And we're seeing companies recalibrate towards that future. What we also know is that people who are getting laid off, particularly those with technical roles, are typically finding a job within 30 days. So it's a bit of a shift. What we're hearing from companies is that, look, like building a product takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of team and manpower and woman power, people power, right? And what it takes to maintain something is oftentimes less or requires different skills. And so when we were in a high growth period of time in the economy, and for a lot of these big tech companies, they needed as many people as possible. They needed bodies so that they could actually scale their businesses. And then as things slowed down, they said, look, we can actually can be more efficient and just operate as opposed to being in this high growth phase. At the same time, there's other companies like AI companies where they need to grow as fast as possible right now. So we're just seeing a shift in the labor market, particularly for technical talent. Now, I think non-technical talent is having a bit of a tougher time because there's all these other roles that support big tech companies. Right? You've got recruiters, you've got marketing folks, you've got people in people operations, all of the complementary roles that help build an incredible company. And that's where we're seeing people be slower to hire, slower to find new jobs, and see a bit of a recalibration there. So, you know, I think tech companies are still always going to be one of the fastest ways for professionals to grow wealth. Because you don't just get paid your salary, you also get paid typically stock options, and the salary bands are typically higher than a non-tech company, but it doesn't come without some risk.
So one of the things I love talking to you about is this balance between big business and small business, because you're one of the few people I know who can talk just as educated and smartly about small businesses and lifestyle companies. And I know a lot of small business owners who are rethinking how they hire, you know, or outsource their social media, you know, management and et cetera, because you can now use tools like ChatGPT to write 5, 10, 20 versions of a caption for you. And you just need the image now to go alongside of it. So what do you think for those people who may not be engineers, but they were the tech person in the room who knew how to use the tech? What are some of the things that you think they should be thinking about in how to continue to provide value and continue to support themselves when there are so many other things? Now I got content for the whole week.
You know, I think that there's always evolutions in technology. I mean, think about it. Back when we grew up, you had to go to the library. And what did you have to do? You had to go to the library. You got to go get these little cards.
Card catalog.
Pull out the card that you need. Then you got to give it to the librarian. You know, you got to do all these things. Now you go into the library, you go to a computer, and you say, this is what I need, right? And it tells you where it's at. And I haven't been to a library in a couple of years. It may even be easier than that these days. So I don't view artificial intelligence, and most specifically generative artificial intelligence, right? AI has been around for a very long time. Machine learning has been around for a very long time. What's new is the generative AI. And I don't view that as a risk to people's ability to get work done. I view it as an enabler for more efficiency, right? The same 20 minutes that it would take you to go to the card catalog now takes you a minute and a half on the computer. It gives you more time to find out what books you want, read the books, etc. So how can you leverage your brain to use these tools to help make your life easier? I read a number that said that only 14% of the country has actually ever used ChatGPT. So if you're listening to this right now and you have used ChatGPT, and if you're using it as a part of your daily life already, you're like light years ahead of everybody else. So really, you can't lose. You just need to continue to learn how you can incorporate it into the work that you're doing every single day and the tasks that you're doing, so you have more time to spend with your family, more time to get high value work done, more time to rest, right? There's so many benefits to it.
You just said something that sparked my interest, because we're still super early. And I don't think people who are not living this every day realize that there's so much of the world who still hasn't even ever tried ChatGPT.
Yeah, completely. I think it's around 30% of Americans have heard of it, right? Maybe 30 to 40%. The Pew Research Center just put out a report on it. But actually try it, use it, create an account, put in a prompt. You know, that's less than half of that.
And so when I look back at, as I went back to the first episode of Black Tech Green Money, you were the first guest on this 3 years ago, and we had conversations about Afrotech. And when you look back at what you intended Afrotech to be when you first got the idea for it, at the time, there was no place we really saw ourselves. There was no room that we could gather in and, you know, have this convening of the annual delegation, right, of Black tech talent in the country. How do you see Afrotech continuing to evolve as we do grow in numbers in this industry and in industries that use technology?
You know, Afrotech has definitely become a festival all on its own. I'm really proud of how far we've come from the days when we were like 450 people in the Westfield Mall in downtown San Francisco. People are always like, no, I'm like, no, legit. Like, we were in the mall, you know, trying to get everybody in, and people were trying to sneak in, and it was, you know, a beautiful moment of community. And now we'll be back in Austin this year with anywhere between 20,000 people plus, all techies, innovators, people who have an interest in figuring out how they can leverage the digital revolution to their own benefit, for their communities, for their families, for their own knowledge, for their own contribution to society. So I'm proud that we've been able to create this mass community, not just for the event that happens every year, but also our regional events now that we have. We have, you know, happy hours all over the country, New Orleans, New York, Seattle. We've got hundreds of thousands of people reading our website every single day, learning about new technologies and new executives who are doing incredible work. So I'm proud that the young version of me, the Black girl in St. Louis that was 20 years old, trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, would be able to go to a site like AfroTech now and have 100,000 different options of what it could look like to be a part of this tech ecosystem, as opposed to what I saw, which was, you know, one article every 6 to 9 months about somebody Black doing something interesting in tech. So I'm really hopeful for the future of our Black community at large. And I mean, it's getting so big, Will, I can barely even keep track of stuff. Like, I see new apps, new founders raising money every day, and I'm like, oh man, you better go. Yeah. I'm so proud of everybody.
You know, across the country, there's this movement against DEI work, you know, affirmative action just being struck down recently. A lot of states are, you know, putting up walls that don't allow DEI work to thrive, and et cetera. And with the work AfroTech has done to help us see ourselves, number one, in these spaces, I want to get your thoughts on how effective that work of creating spaces for us has been with getting us hired in places that we were already qualified for, but we're getting the opportunities to work in, versus in the large part, this is the view I come from, but I realize the value of both perspectives is creating our own tables. You know, so instead of, I'm not of the mind to just beat down the walls to create opportunities at a table that doesn't want me there. I want to create my own tables, and I want to get your thoughts on how do we think about these things?
You know, I believe that people of color in this country are the new majority. So there, of course, is going to be a backlash from people who are about to be the new minority at trying to keep us, slow our growth as much as possible. And currently they have the systems and the tools and the infrastructure to be able to do that because they're the people in power. And they have, you know, hundreds of years, centuries ahead of us to be able to maintain that power. But we're catching up faster than they can slow us down. You know, I believe that I'm a hopeful pragmatist in a lot of ways. And I believe that our communities, people of color, you know, even the LGBT community, I mean, anyone who is deemed a minority in this country is gaining power, which is one of the reasons for the backlash. It's one of the reasons why they're trying to tighten controls on people's uteruses and trying to say that, no, you guys are equal now. You don't need these special treatments, right? And it's just, it's not true. They're wrong. But I believe it's a result of the fact that we're gaining traction here. So I think that all progress doesn't come without tension. And the key is to your point, stay focused and keep fighting the problem, not the people, because that's going to be ultimately what continues to allow us to push forward. And I agree with you. I mean, we're seeing now, we've always had ideas about what we want to do in the future, how we want Black folks to have our own channels of distribution, our own networks, have our own financial systems, you know, have our own venture capitalists. And you're seeing it. Black VCs, even though they're having a tough time, still have never raised more money than what we've raised. Black founders, even though we're having a tough time collectively, we have never had as much assets as we have had in the last couple of years. You know, even startups, business owners, the 2020 huge influx of cash that went into Black folks' hands, you know, that stuff was put to good use in a lot of organizations that I know. So, you know, even the NAACP, like their budget 3x'd since George Floyd's murder. That's going to go a long way for us as a people, as a community.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over.
My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AT&T connects and ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to talk about social media. I'm curious, Will, your perspective on Spill and Threads and all the things going out.
Do you think it was going to make it? Also, I was going to ask you about this because, I wasn't going to name anybody, but I was going to let you name them if you wanted to because, I'm on Threads.
Listen, we're on a podcast. This is what it is.
And so it's so interesting to me because I was super excited. And not to say I'm not excited anymore about Spill because I think it has an interesting lane. I think the lane... One of the things I value in businesses is like valuing niche. And I think that that's okay. And this is actually something I learned from you. It's like, you don't have to be striving to be this humongous unicorn and et cetera. You can have a very thriving, good company, growing company, and still be in the realm of Silicon Valley, a small lifestyle thing. Mm-hmm. And lifestyle doesn't necessarily mean you're doing 2 million a year. It can mean you're doing 20. It can mean you're doing $30 million a year. And you were actually somebody on this podcast who helped reframe my thinking on that. And so I feel like Spill, even fan base in a way, like they have this lane that if they can stay authentic to that, there could be opportunity there. I think it's harder now. When you have an app that can come out like Threads that automatically has your population and automatically you come into the gate with followers, it's really hard to compete with that. And you don't have to go build an audience.
Yeah, my recommendation to the Spill founders is that they don't try to compete with Twitter and they don't try to compete with Threads. You know, you build for your target demographic of the Black community, the talkative, conversational Black community, and figure out how you can uniquely solve our problems. Because Thread, to your point, is going to be the size of Twitter on this trajectory in the next less than a year, right? And so there's going to be just a lot of noise, just like there is on Twitter already, just like there is on Instagram. And Meta is one of the biggest companies in the world. They're going to continue to be incentivized to build for the majority and the people who are going to advertisers at the end of the day. And so at some point we will be secondary to their priority. I mean, I think they did a great job seeding it. I know a lot of people who worked on the Threads app that are internal at Meta, and they have Black employees who are involved in building this. So I know that they had an inclusive team, but you can already see it's just going to be Instagram, but with words.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, it's not even like actually going to be how Twitter was, where you got to meet new people and get in different interest groups and kind of dig deep into different conversations. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think it's just going to be the same people you follow on Instagram, you're going to follow on Threads, and people are going to be pontificating and using ChatGPT like they do on LinkedIn right now. And it's just going to be this like weird LinkedIn hybrid with Instagram.
So what do you say to founders who are out raising money? And like, if the Spill guys were raising money today, I'm imagining it'd be a lot harder to do that versus months ago when they did it. But we always get caught up in this trap of, well, how do you compete with the thing that's out there? How do you create your moat? How do you create your authentic lane to where you can grow, especially if you're taking outside capital? How do you prove to people that you can survive in a water that Twitter exists in, that Thread now exists in, if I'm Spill?
I mean, my perspective is that Spill has an opportunity to build a community, and they can do something that Clubhouse messed up on, right? Which is to build a community that is self-sustaining, right? And I recommend that they build in a revenue stream immediately. Don't go the route of trying to get 100 million usernames and then be ad supported. Because that's one of the reasons why Twitter's having a tough time. And that's one of the reasons that Reddit's having a tough time. It's because they're all ad supported. Now, fan base, I mean, I do feel bad for fan base a little bit. Right app, wrong time. You know, if fan base came out this year or last month and was able to get wrapped up in the PR campaigns of Twitter and Threads, they could be just as successful. It's a very different build, like it's a different solution to the same problem. But my recommendation, at least fan base, is not ad supported, I guess is my point, right? Like, I think it's smart to have a different type of business model behind the app, because if you're going to be ad supported, then you have to go for scale, which is going to put you up against these big guys.
Yeah. This brings up an interesting conversation I've had on this podcast several over the last episodes, is this idea of being mission driven versus opportunistic. And even with the guys from Slim and Huskies, I talked about this with, and so like, they didn't grow up loving pizza, you know, right? But they found an opportunity to do something. And not often do we get an opportunity just to be opportunistic, but we're told you have to have a mission, and you have to have you're trying to make a change in the world. And I think both things are valuable. Like, when I shop at Target, I'm not shopping at Target because I believe in Target's mission. They happen to have what I need. But as Black
utility.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But so often we are put in the position of, like, you have to believe in something and talk about your mission and your values. And is that always fair, or can we just be opportunistic?
Oh, I mean, you're talking to somebody who I believe in both for sure. I mean, I think that if you only build things for money, it won't work. Like, you have to be motivated by more than just money. You know, there's cheaper, faster ways to make money in this world than to build an app or to try to build a huge social network or Black community or try to build a media company for Black millennials, right? Like, so no, I think you got to have some sort of purpose driven reason to be successful at scale. I'm sure there's outliers. I'm sure there's people who don't give a shit and build companies, huge companies. But I think that most people who are successful have some other motivator other than money.
So let's put Blavity in this conversation, because Blavity is, you know, the biggest Black platform on the internet. You know, kudos to the entire team for achieving what we've achieved. And I was just reading Deborah Lee's book, I Am Deborah Lee, and she was describing how BET grew and because of the growth that they had in the mid-90s, you know, late 90s, a whole bunch of other opportunities presented themselves. They were chasing a clothing line at once. They wanted to do magazines and all these different things and original content even. And so as Blavity continues to grow and be bigger and more successful and bring on more talented people, how do you think about those opportunities for Blavity to dip its toe into other verticals that allow it to be more than just a publisher in that way?
Yeah, I mean, we have a 3-year vision for the company that I socialized and collaborated on with our executive leadership team, because to your point, there's always more. When you are serving an underserved community that has such a huge impact, like Black culture, then you could do anything. I could do a clothing line. We could have a book club. We could buy a little town and make a little Black utopia, but we could do whatever we want, right? So the question is, how do you evaluate that stuff? And to me, you gotta have a really clear mission and vision. Currently, we're on a pathway to get to 100 million in revenue. You know, that's our business target. And pretty soon. Right. And the reason why we're picking that number is partially because we believe that's a number for freedom. I want to make sure that this company lives beyond me, that it's an institution that is an advocate and a distribution channel for people who are doing interesting things and helpful things for underserved voices in this country, whether that's talent acquisition and building out our new product Talent Infusion, which helps companies hire and recruit Black talent and have really awesome talent pools, or it's Home and Texture, our new brand that focuses on interior design and helping millennials explore if home buying is the right experience for them, or how they want to decorate, or what they're going to do with their pets and their kids' rooms and all these types of things. You know, I want to make sure that we're there at every life cycle. At the same time, to your point, like, it's really critical to not get distracted. And that getting distracted does not mean we don't test stuff. I can give you 100 things that we have tested that have not worked out.
Yeah.
Do you remember Lunch Table?
Oh, yeah. I do.
Blavity TV, Lunch Table, Summit 21. I mean, I could name off the whole thing. And those things don't embarrass me. To me, I'm like, yeah, this is our job, is to test and see what is important and sticky to our customer, our target demographic. And if they like it, we'll keep building it.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last 1.5 years. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
oldest girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by oldest girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we're talking about focus in a way right now, and we just talked about these new social media apps. And I wonder how you decide what you will share, because I think about what the opportunity thread provides and what you just discussed with Blavity's sense of focus on what it wants to be. How do you decide? Because there's an opportunity for people to grow a new audience on things like threads, because it's like blue ocean right now. Maybe in a week it won't be such, but right now there's an opportunity. How do you decide what's on brand for you? Or do you have a, you know, filter of, oh, this is not on brand. I want to talk about these things.
Well, on Spill, I didn't put my government name because I wasn't sure if it was just going to be a bunch of gossip. I was like, I don't know. I'm a little sus. Like, my profile picture is not on there. I am just observing.
Yeah.
Because any app that calls itself was like, find the tea.
I'm
like,
the
this
tea.
Is going to end bad. This is not going to end well for Black folks. You know? So, like, let me not make myself a target on here, and let me just be a passive viewer. So, yes, I am very cautious just to make sure that things are going on. On Threads, I think it's interesting because you have all of your Instagram followings, but then you actually have to say something interesting. You can't just, like, post a cute picture. You know, I started a podcast, the Journey podcast, because I wanted to talk and share my thoughts and my ideas and really be in dialogue with really interesting people. And that has been a really fun space for me because I don't feel like, you know, it's a 10-second clip or it's just a photo moment. It's really a genuine conversation where there can be nuance and people can actually understand my perspective and I can learn their perspective as well.
Yeah.
Threads is going to be interesting. I believe that it's going to either revert straight to how people were on Twitter, because I don't think people change. I don't think humans change. Twitter, the platform, inherently is not bad. It's the people and it's the rules. So do we believe that Zuck is going to create better rules and empower nicer people? I'm not sure, Will.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. What do you think?
Well, I think there's already people who would complain about their filtering and banning of people that Twitter has obviously let in. You know, Alex Jones can have a voice. Tristan Tate, Andrew Tate can have a voice. And Andrew, if you are ever seeing like a Tristan Tate or Andrew Tate, they talk about it, they only showed cars on Instagram and were banned because of the other global narrative around who they are. And so I think we're already seeing it because of Facebook's policies. Mm. We're already seeing that.
Mm. Right. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think it's such a fun generation for us to be a part of. I mean, we're getting to see these things, the rise of empires that we thought would never fail. We never thought Clubhouse would fail. We were all pissed about Clubhouse and how Black people built it and how they raised all this money and like all this stuff. You know, nobody, what is Clubhouse doing right now? You know, so I'm holding my breath. I'm not going to have our team build out a whole content strategy for Threads and do all this stuff against it, because I think that everything is up for grabs right now. It's a beautiful wild, wild west of the internet.
Do you think we were too excited about crypto?
Oh, that's a tough question. You know, I wasn't a crypto advocate. I was a blockchain Web3 advocate and just making sure people understood. I believe blockchain is still a fantastic innovation and solution to many, many things. Like the idea of having a centralized point of information that is not able to be disrupted or frauded or anything is something we still need. In fact, we may need it more because of generative AI. I need to know if this photo has been touched by AI or what is the original source. I need to know if this book is actually just an aggregation of 17 different books. What is the original source? So I believe blockchain still has a world in for us. Like there's a world in which blockchain is still alive. I believe that NFTs, which was basically a photo that granted you membership with benefits, was bullshit. And like you're talking to somebody who had like a couple of NFTs.
Right?
I mean, I'm always going to play the game, but like, yeah, I think NFTs gave Web3 a bad rap, but I believe in the fundamentals of a disaggregated source of truth.
I love that. Because we have these shifting conversations in tech. You know, it was the metaverse, and then we started talking about the metaverse, and it was AI. And before AI, it was AR and VR, all these different things. And, you know, the metaverse, which Facebook even changed its name to it, and people say, you probably shouldn't have done that because the conversation changed. But then you have Apple who puts out or will release next year an entire probably a game changer for the that sector.
I'm buying those immediately.
Oh, you got to have them. It's a mandatory
immediately.
It's a mandatory have. Even though price point will price a lot of people out.
But initially, all technology is expensive initially.
So how do you think about, as an investor, because you're an investor also, how do you think about, with what I just said, I think it just came to my mind, the Warren Buffett quote, be, you know, scared when everybody's greedy, be greedy when everybody else is scared. How do you think about those things when these technology happens this fast?
Well, as an investor, I'm relatively conservative with my investments. I invest in people. I don't invest in technologies. So I invest in people and founders that I think are incredible and deserve to win. You know, and you know, I'm an angel investor in Gold. I'm an angel investor in a company called Boxed Up. I'm an angel investor in a company called Public. You know, I like companies that are created by people who care. Now, from a stocks perspective and like a general market perspective, you know, you kind of want to let the big boys play it out. If something's really trendy, it doesn't really matter if you jump on it in day one versus like day 500, because if it's really trendy, it's going to be great for a really long time, right? If you could have bought Facebook stock or Meta stock, I guess, whether it was year one or even year two, you still would have made an incredible return, right? So for me, there's no really like rush to try to be the first into any sort of new technology. I think it's better to wait. As an investor.
Okay. Got it. You've got a new podcast. You just touched on it. You have two podcasts now. I'm not sure if you're going to keep doing Work Smart. I think there's value for there for sure. But I want to talk about the journey for a second. This is, you know, defined as a more personal, it's a more personal, intimate Morgan, the bond that we've seen. It delves into the captivating stories of purpose-driven achievers on their quest for living their best lives. I want to talk about what this means for you as a brand and as a personality. A successful Black woman, an entrepreneur, a founder, an investor, and more. People want to know you. And how do you think about creating this type of content that lets people know more about you personally and why that might be important?
Yeah, I wanted to create this podcast, you know, to your point, because I wanted to have a place to have a conversation. And I felt like Instagram and Twitter and all these other platforms, it was too transactional. And it wasn't enough about like really seeking the nuance, because I think that the devil's in the nuance. I think that's really where the real meat of all of our lives are, is in the gray area. It's not what's black and white. That stuff's easy to figure out. And that stuff is easy to explain. You know, so I've made some different choices in my life that are contrarian. I started this company when I was 24. I made a decision that I was going to live my 20s hard, that I was going to work my ass off and make a lot of personal sacrifices so I could live fully in my 30s and beyond, you know, and I made a decision to move. I left the coast. I left LA to move to Nashville, the middle of Tennessee.
Yeah.
Right. In the peak, what people would think is the peak of my career. My perception is I left LA so that I would not peak in that moment in my career, so that I could continue to be a contributor and a builder and a leader in the space, and so that I had longevity as an entrepreneur. And I just believe that social media is a lot of really surface level things. And my hope is that the podcast can help provide people who think differently, people who want to live an extraordinary life and want to do it on their own terms, whatever those terms mean for them, that I'm able to help give them the tools and the stories to be able to do that.
You know, I brought up Work Smart, and one of the motto, I guess you can call it, of Work Smart was so you can work smarter, not harder. Right. And I guess you can probably think about that and you can challenge this, but I think about it in the way of like the 4-hour work week and, you know, this idea of, you know, we need to chill out on grind culture and all of these different things. And in a way, I mean, to be the devil's advocate, like you could talk about, hey, you know, money isn't everything, but you got the money. But when you don't have the money, money is everything, you know. Mm-hmm. So how does your intention of that idea of working smarter, not harder, and the intention of, hey, I'm trying to actually find my success, how do they not correlate to each other? Because you had to grind to get there. And Tim Ferriss,
I'm a capitalist though, right? I mean, I'm not one of those people who's going to say, you know, just like live off the land and like screw capitalism and we shouldn't have to do, like, I'm not that person. You know me, I'm like, no, you want to beat the odds. There's got to be some sort of extraordinary variable for you beating the odds. Sleepless and what's in nights. Your control is anxiety. And I believe in privilege as well. Like, I had opportunities that were afforded to me from privilege. I was born into a two-parent household, upper middle class in Missouri, you know, so I had that already as a privilege. We were born in America. That's a privilege. So I believe in taking advantage of the opportunities and the privileges that you have, being mindful of those, but then you also have to do the work, right? And this kind of, there's a lot of narratives on like work less, right? So that's not what I'm trying to say when I talk about work smart. I mean, if you listen to the theories that I have, the frameworks that I use, it's really about discipline and being your best self, right? And that's just got to be a reflection of whatever your baseline is, because we all start at different baselines. And that's what I try to talk about on the podcast. That's what I try to talk about in my newsletters. And that's what I coach the small businesses that I work with. It's like, okay, what is your baseline? What is your truth? And then what's the gap between your truth and where you want to be? And then let's start taking actions to get there. And it might mean you have to be uncomfortable temporarily, but the truth and the vision should be so freaking juicy that you're like, I'm okay being uncomfortable for 2 years. I'm okay being uncomfortable for 6 months. I'm okay being uncomfortable for 10 years because my vision is so good that it's going to work out.
Yeah. I'm so glad you mentioned St. Louis and you mentioned Nashville. And I wonder, could you have done, because what I think about when I do every episode of this podcast is most of us do not live in LA, New York, or Atlanta, or but most of us are in just random cities, you know, spread across the country. And so often content to help us find success is based from those locations and it comes from those perspectives. Could you have achieved what you did? And obviously this is hypothetical, having stayed or only living in the Midwest. Did you have to go?
No, I couldn't. Yes, I had to leave. I do not believe that I could have achieved what I achieved at the age and the speed that I did living in St. Louis, Missouri. There's just not enough resources and there's not enough social capital for this level of ambition that I had and the vision of Blavity. Being in Silicon Valley, you know, I started the company living in San Francisco. Now, Silicon Valley, you can't follow my model because everything has changed. You know, moving to San Francisco today is not the same thing as moving to San Francisco 10 years ago, over 10 years ago, right? So, but at the time, it was an epicenter of social capital. It was an epicenter of innovation. Your Lyft driver had an app. You know, your apartment, everybody who lived within your apartment building was working for a really cool startup and going to hacker houses after work. And all types of incredible innovation was happening. Probably in the same way, it feels the same way that when everyone moved to Miami, when people were working on Web3, it was like everyone in Web3 is spending time in Miami, right? So being a part of communities has been what's helped fuel me to success. And I believe that whatever you're building, if you want to be a country music star and you want to be a music writer, moving to Nashville is where your community is. If you want to be a part of Black culture and hip hop, you probably should move to Atlanta. You know what I mean? Make it where the best are making it. And then when you move somewhere else, you're going to be like, I'm a big fish in a small pond.
Yeah. I want to end this talking about Afrotech, but before I do, I want to just talk because if anybody follows you on social media, they get to learn a little bit about how you operate daily. You know, you love matcha and journaling is obviously a thing for you.
Yes.
Talk about what helps you manage your life as an entrepreneur, as a personality, even like some of those tactical things, like I gotta have, you know, my AirPods, like that. If I don't have my AirPods, I can't survive. Like what are some of those things that mean something to you in order to function?
Well, I think it's changed over time. The one thing that hasn't changed is I had a virtual assistant, like probably within the first few weeks of founding Blavity, even back when I was 24, when it was like weird for someone to have an assistant, you know, but I've always valued my time over the cash. And so I was willing to pay to offset some of the tasks, the research, some of the things that I felt like someone else could do 80% as good as I could. That was my threshold. If you can do it 80% as good as I can, then like you should probably do it first, right? So having a virtual assistant, a personal assistant, or now I have a chief of staff, you know, has been really critical to my ability to be able to juggle so many different types of businesses and teams and, you know, have somewhat of a life, right? I think that's probably the number one contributor to my sustainability in this world and not being burned out. The second thing is my iPhone. I use my iPhone like more than I use my laptop or my desktop. You know, I can spend all day on my iPhone and get a lot of work done. And I think that people underestimate this tool right here. I think that you really have an entire computer operating system in your hands. You can be anywhere. You don't need to be at home. You know, you don't need to be in front of a desk to get a lot of work done. Picking up the phone and just making a call, right?
Yeah.
Writing out your ideas, taking notes. So having a assistant and having a phone, iPhone, and Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
Unstoppable, baby.
Real quick, how is the process? Because you talk about this on Instagram. How's the process of writing a book for you? How's that going?
Oh my gosh, writing a book is one of the hardest things I've ever done. I thought it wasn't going to be that hard. Like, you know, people are like, I went on a retreat and I wrote my whole book. And, you know, I'm like, nah, B, that's bullshit. You definitely did more than just go on vacation and write a book. Like, no. this thing takes a lot of self-reflection. I didn't want to write a memoir. I wanted to write a really tactical book.
Yeah.
I don't think my life's that interesting. I think what's interesting is how we've all worked together, how my co-founders and I have worked together, how my investors and I have worked together, how early employees have worked together and to build this thing. And I also have realized that I had a lot of trauma as a founder, as a Black founder, as a female founder. And I've blocked a lot of it out because it didn't serve me to hold on to it, to have a chip on my shoulder. It didn't serve me to keep that stuff.
Yeah.
But when you're writing a book, you got to go back.
Yeah.
You've got to ask different people about, well, what was your perception of that one time we missed payroll? What was your perception of that? Well, we had that conference in the mall. What was your perception of what was your perspective of this? And so I've learned a lot about from other people's perspectives, you know, talking to them about this book through this process. And I'm really proud of how far we've come and how we've defied the odds. I mean, it really is an incredible feat of really less than 300 people coming together to decide to do something and have this kind of impact. It's a beautiful thing.
Has been being that you are a journaler, somebody who journals, has that been helpful to you in writing this book?
Yes and no. But yes, because there's definitely a lot of things that I wrote out. Like, I remember when I was first raising money, I wrote out, you know, who I wanted to raise money from and how much I wanted from them. So it's beautiful to see, be like, oh, like low key, I did that. Right. And then there's other things where I like write out, like, you know, I want to wake up in the morning and do this and do that. I do a lot of affirmational journaling where you're kind of like projecting into the future and writing things out, like visualization. And then there's all types of stuff. I'm like, definitely didn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, thank God.
Yeah.
that did not come to life.
All right. Let's end this talking about Afrotech for the last couple of minutes I have for you. So Afrotech November this year, back in Austin. Also have Afrotech Executive this fall. So if I'm going to my first Afrotech this year, or let's say I'm preparing for Afrotech this fall, how can I get involved over the summer to be more intimate with the brand and people who I may meet there?
Yeah. I would say first things first is sign up for the newsletter, because you're going to get a daily, be a part of the daily conversation of what's going on and what's trending. We also write a lot about the different people who are coming to Afrotech, everyone from board executives to CEOs of major corporations to the founders who raised the most amount of money this year to the VCs who are funding them, right? So regardless of where you sit in the ecosystem, the newsletter is going to give you a peek into what you can expect at Afrotech. And we oftentimes will kind of introduce you to people that you'll see there. Second thing is try to go to one of our events before you get to Afrotech. It is incredibly beautiful and overwhelming to be around 20,000 plus very nerdy Black folks having a good time, but also like we are intense, you know, like imagine if you are a nerd and you think that this is a place for you, multiply your intensity about whatever you nerd out about by all of us. We're not quiet people. You know, we're not like laid back people. You know, we are going in that space in the convention center at the music festivals and we are feeling so excited. So just a really rich experience that can also be draining. So go to the happy hour before, try to meet up with people locally who are going to Afrotech. Go to Afrotech Executive in New York so that you can see some familiar faces and you're able to take full advantage of the experience, because watch out, we do not stop during Afrotech. It's like 4 or 5 days if nonstop.
Are we talking anything yet about how this might be different than years past?
Yeah, we can talk about how it's different. We've got a beautiful, beautiful lineup of music. In the last year, we did music for the first time and I had a music festival. So this year, we're taking it to another level. So by the time this comes out, you should see the announcement of who's the artist. So I'm super pumped about that. And we have an outdoor park this year, bringing that back, because we just know there's so many people in the city and some people who aren't necessarily going to the convention center but want to participate. So we're making more spaces for people. We've 3x the size of the executive stage. As more Black folks have moved up into director or VP level positions, we're having conversations that are more specific to middle managers and how they can move forward from a professional development perspective. Then last but not least, I will not be there. Because what? I am having a baby.
This is
so I will be giving birth during AfroTech, God willing. So
That's super bittersweet. That's super bittersweet.
I know. I like, as soon as I found out my due date, I was like, oh man.
Timing.
And there's like no way, there's no way to finesse it. Like my due date is the first day of AfroTech. So hopefully everyone will be sending me all of their black joy and, you know, we'll both be birthing new experiences.
Black Tech Green Money is a production of Blavity AfroTech on the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia, and is produced by Morgan DeBon and me, Will Lucas, with additional production support by Sarah Ergen and Rose McLucas. Special thank you to Micah Davis, Vanessa Serrano, and Maya Muldrew. Learn more about my guests and other tech disruptors and innovators at AfroTech.com. Enjoying Black Tech Green Money? Share this with somebody. Go get your money. Peace and love. AT&T Connects, an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Badata. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting 2 young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.